This is Radio MD COVID-19 Weekly, your source for COVID-19 news from the front lines of healthcare. I'm Caitlin White. We've made it to September. When we started the show, I truly didn't think we'd be making it into the fall, but as long as COVID is around, we'll be here with you. Later in this episode, hear about ways to keep your eyes healthy with all this extra screen time we're doing, as well as more on the neurological symptoms of COVID-19. But first, news updates. Vaping is linked to an elevated risk of COVID-19 among teenagers and young adults. According to the study led by researchers at the Stanford University School of Medicine, teens and young adults who vape are 5 times more likely to become infected with the coronavirus compared with those who did not use e-cigarettes. Those who both vaped and traditionally smoked were nearly 7 times more likely to become infected. Researchers say harming the lungs in any way translates to reduced immunity to infection, and that could certainly mean more propensity for COVID-19. About 6% of the deaths attributed to COVID-19 are caused by the coronavirus alone. The CDC website disclosed the relatively small number of people who died from only COVID-19, with no other cause of death mentioned. About 6%, approximately 9,700 deaths, were attributed to the coronavirus alone. According to the CDC, the other 94% had an average of 2.6 additional conditions or causes of death, such as heart disease, diabetes, or sepsis. Researchers in Hong Kong say they've confirmed that a person can be infected with COVID-19 twice. Proof comes from a 33-year-old man in Hong Kong who first caught COVID in March. He was tested for the virus after he developed a cough, sore throat, fever, and a headache for 3 days. He stayed in the hospital until he tested twice negative for the virus in mid-April. But in August, that same man returned to Hong Kong from a recent trip in Spain and the UK, areas that have seen a resurgence of COVID-19 cases. At the airport, he was screened for COVID-19 using a test that checks saliva for the virus. He tested positive, but this time had no symptoms. And the first U.S. case of a confirmed coronavirus reinfection happened on Monday. It looks to be a patient in Nevada, according to NBC News. You may have hit Zoom fatigue in recent weeks, but meetings and gatherings, even school in some areas, are taking place on screen for what seems like a little while longer. We've never looked at screens more than before, and maintaining eye health is an important part of staying healthy right now. Rhonda Soest is the Senior Vice President of Sales and Marketing at iPromise and gives us a few tips on maintaining eye health during the pandemic. Rhonda, with the lines between work and home being so blurred right now, I know for me, everything happens on this one laptop I'm using right now. How can we give our eyes a break, even, you know, when we do have to go to work day in and day out?
Like most things, screens are fine in moderation, but with many of our work environments and schools being nearly or completely virtual, we have no choice to be exposed to screens for extended periods of time. And while all of this may be necessary exposure, it's still an increased strain on our eyes. And we're all, including kids, are feeling the effects of this additional screen time. Since COVID-19, it's been estimated that kids are watching some type of computer screen for 6 or more hours a day, and adult professionals are spending over 10 hours a day in front of a screen. This is actually a shocking 500% increase in screen time for kids. And 85% of parents are reporting that they have an increased concern, the impact of all of the screen time on their child's overall health. There is a real chance that this increased screen time is affecting how we feel. 73% report that looking at screens makes us feel more physically tired. Some of the other most talked about symptoms of screen time include tired and strained eyes, headaches, and even disrupted sleep cycles. However, one of the most concerning impacts of screen time, especially on young eyes, is the increase in the cases of nearsightedness. In the last 50 years, the number of kids who need glasses has nearly doubled, according to Dr. David Upley, who's a clinical spokesperson for the American Academy of Ophthalmology. We also know that more than 95% of U.S. households now have a smartphone in their house. And about 42% of kids aged 8 and under are now on their own tablet, compared to less than 1% in 2011. And these screens are only inches from our eyes, from our kids' eyes, and these eyes are absorbing the blue light from these screens. So you might ask, what's the issue with this increase in screen time? More screen time exposure equals more exposure to blue light. We know that this type of blue light affects our macular health, as well as I mentioned, sleep, and even our overall mental health. So this increased exposure to blue light calls for an increased protection. You know, 20 years ago, we didn't see the need for sunscreen. We sent ourselves and our kids out in the sun without any protection. And we now know that the most effective and natural way to protect your skin from the sun is to wear sunscreen. So today, we wouldn't go outside or send our kids outside without sunscreen. But because of this increased screen time exposure, we're now essentially doing this without sunscreen. That same blue light in the sun is in our screens, and our eyes are only inches away with no protection. So how can we help? First of all, you have to suggest that you talk to your eye care doctor. There's also a simple rule you can follow, and that is taking a 20-second break from close-up work for every 20 minutes. The 20/20 rule. We can also help protect our eyes. There are two critical antioxidants that are located in the macula, or make up part of our macula. These are zeaxanthin and lutein. Zeaxanthin is heavily concentrated in the macula, which is responsible for absorbing this blue light emitted by screens. The iPromise Screen Shield supplements can help naturally defend against this problem. It's the ultimate blue light defense. Zeaxanthin and lutein can help us build and maintain a strong macular pigment by increasing carotenoids in your diet.
And wrapping up here, I know the latest craze is blue light lenses, getting those glasses with the kind of filters built right in. Tell us a bit more about how those work and how effective do you think they are in preventing that blue light from getting in from all of our screen use?
Blue light glasses are certainly an option, and they do filter out some of the blue light. They work best in conjunction with a natural vitamin that will also help boost and support the macular pigment.
Our understanding of COVID-19 is evolving daily. What we know today is that the virus is a multi-organ disease, affecting more than just the lungs. It also affects the heart, kidneys, and pancreas. More recently, doctors are seeing neurological symptoms in COVID-19 patients, including stroke, indicating disruptions to the central nervous system as well. Dr. Babak Jaromi is a neurosurgeon at Northwestern Medicine and joins us to tell us more about the neurological impacts of coronavirus. So, Doctor, what kinds of neurological complications are you seeing with COVID-19 patients right now?
We're seeing the entire gamut at Northwestern Memorial. Anything from full-blown large vessel stroke. This is where a major blood vessel to the brain is blocked, leading to classic symptoms your listeners have probably seen, such as paralysis, inability to speak or understand speech or facial droop, to even the less definitive and more mild symptoms such as confusion, delirium, agitation, and even neuropsychiatric disorders.
And when it comes to the neurological things you're seeing, are these, you know, symptoms of the virus as it's happening, or are they long-lasting effects after people who have recovered? What are the different, you know, levels of neurological symptoms we're seeing?
That's a terrific question. So anyone who has a severe illness and is hospitalized for a very long time period will get brain dysfunction. If you're in the ICU for weeks on end on a ventilator with a disturbed sleep-wake cycle and a disturbed immune system, you will definitely have brain dysfunction. COVID adds to that by causing what we call a hypercoagulable state. Basically, the blood becomes too thick and wants to clot more often. And so it starts plugging up either the small blood vessels or, in some cases, the bigger blood vessels. This means that portions of the brain don't get enough blood, so they don't get enough oxygen and nutrition, and that causes a stroke, be it a small and scattered stroke or a very large one. And so not only does it affect the lungs and the rest of the body and put you in a critical system, it also directly triggers many strokes or even major strokes in the brain. And that's where the significant danger of this virus comes in.
And so with so much being unknown and, you know, there, I feel like there's different symptoms of COVID popping up every day. Stroke seems like an incredibly serious one. So what are the signs of a stroke and when should someone, you know, seek out medical attention?
I'm so glad you asked that. One of the biggest troubles we've had is, despite a pandemic increasing this type of bad stroke, we've had a decrease in patients calling the EMS, calling 911, or coming into the hospital, either for fear of getting infected or social distancing concerns or just thinking they're not going to get the care. And nothing could be further from the truth. Hospital is the safest place with the biggest amount of screening before you get in. So I'd ask your listeners to memorize the acronym FAST. F-A-S-T, that stands for facial droop. So if your loved one's having an asymmetric smile or a droopy face, that's a warning sign. A stands for arm, arm weakness. Hold both of your arms in front of you, and if one starts drifting down, that's a sign of stroke. Speech, if your loved one is having difficulty understanding what you're saying or can't talk themselves or is speaking gibberish, then that takes you to T, which is time. Time's of the essence. In a major stroke, the brain's dying at 2 million brain cells per minute. The sooner you call 911, the sooner you get to the hospital, the sooner we can halt that inevitable brain death and leave you with more brain to recover and rewire.
When it comes to these neurological symptoms, you know, with patients who also have COVID, how often are you seeing this kind of display of symptoms, I guess?
So if we just look at the really biggest type of strokes, the major strokes that require emergency treatment to open the blood vessels, you're talking maybe about 1% to 2% of patients with COVID, which is still a lot more than the average population. But if we look at the less differentiated neurological signs and symptoms like confusion, delirium, even psychosis, a quarter to half of these patients will exhibit these symptoms during a hospitalization for severe COVID.
Wow. And of those patients, you know, who are in the hospital now and are sticking around, how are you caring for the neurological complications of COVID-19?
We've learned to be very cognizant of the extra risk of stroke in these patients. We assess these patients to see if they have that increased clotting of blood, and we can will often institute intermediate dosages of blood thinners early on to try to prevent the secondary effects of COVID causing this thickening of the blood and causing these secondary strokes. Of course, in the meantime, we have whole new protocols for patient care, separation, different ventilation, different wards and different ICUs. And on our healthcare providers, we have a specific protected code stroke for patients who have COVID but need an emergency procedure, where we can do everything in the, before COVID as fast as we did, yet do it with all the protective personal equipment to keep our healthcare workers safe and sound.
Dr. Jarome, is there anything else you want listeners to know about this new category of neurological complications also with COVID-19?
I would ask everyone to remember that even if we're in the middle of a pandemic, stroke care hasn't stopped. Hospitals are safe. We are screened as an employee even before coming in. If you have the warning signs, please don't blow it off. Call 911. We're here to care for you. If you don't call EMS, we can't do anything. So don't blow off the symptoms. And the other thing I would leave your listeners with is, we are in this pandemic as a team. We're in the same boat. Look after yourself. Look after each other. Adhere to safe social distancing rules and masking. The more we do that, the more we decrease the spread, the better are the chances of getting through this pandemic until an effective vaccine comes along.
Well, this has been Radio MD COVID-19 Weekly. Contact us with questions or give us some feedback at COVID-19 at radiomd.com. I'm Caitlin White. Stay safe and 6 feet apart.